Rolling.
We're on.
Rolling.
Yeah, we're on. Let me do an intro. My guest does not need an introduction. He should look very familiar to everybody. This is my first guest on camera. I have to do my corny welcome back to episode 5 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's Julian, and we'll get to my guest in a second. If you have a problem and you want to call in, call 877-557-SWWP. That's 877-557-SWWP. And I'd like to welcome back one of my closest friends in this shit, Clay from Love is Blind Season 6.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back. Different circumstances.
A little different circumstances.
We've moved into a much bigger, bigger and better studio, man. Look at this space.
That means it's going to be raw content. You know, raw content. So that's good.
Very raw. Great seeing you, man. Welcome back to New York. Thank you for trekking up the fucking Mount Olympus over here.
So this guy Julian didn't tell me where he lives, man. I don't know how you close deals when it comes to women, because you have to go up literally seven flights of stairs. Bro, I was exhausted coming here. It's in the most New York shit. I'm like, bro, is there an elevator? Like, I know you not going home after taking like with a woman. How the hell is she walking up these damn stairs?
I knew it was bad because like I buzzed you in and 2 minutes later I get a phone call. And you're like, you said 31, right? And I know I'm supposed to see that. Oh, shit. Well, I'm bleeping that. We're like, oh, they think it's like that floor. But I'm like, nah, it's on like the fit. We're up there. Yeah, so you got to go. So you made it. Happy to have you back, man. Yeah. What brings you back to the East Coast this time?
So fly, Eagles, fly. My Eagles just won the Super Bowl. Yes, so, sir. You know, I got to go to the parade tomorrow. So I'm heading to Philadelphia.
Hell yeah.
You know, I'm from the Jersey area. So my sister's birthday is on Saturday. Okay. So I'm going to be celebrating a birthday with her. But I'm always in New York, man. So you can always see me when I'm out here, man.
We got to get you out here permanently at some point, man.
The issue is my business. You know, like.
Yeah, true.
It's like, I mean, I think I could do my business in New York. I actually think it would be pretty successful out here. But it's just, I wouldn't get as much lee room with the warm season, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. How much longer is it extended down there in Charlotte?
I would say I'm still able to get rentals. My last rental was like November 5th. Okay. It was still like 70, like high 70s. Yeah. And I probably could do more. Like even December we had like, actually last week it was 72 degrees in Charlotte. Now it's like 36. Shit. I don't know what's going on.
Shout out global warming.
Yeah,
man.
Shout out global warming.
I got to go down there. I still want to get on the boat life. I'm like itching to get out there. I hate also, this is already, I'm going to just say this if you're all watching on YouTube. I'm significantly lower than Clay. My chair is like a foot shorter. And I feel like this is, again, first time doing an on-camera thing. I don't like this. Well, I'll deal with it. Yeah. But I'm just going to put that out there. I look like a fucking midget. Is that sensitive? I don't know. I look small. And it's really annoying me. So
we're working out the kinks.
So, yeah. Obviously, let's get to... You're the expert on... most dating things, and obviously Love is Blind. And the funny thing is, we're recording this the day before the new season of Love is Blind comes out.
Correct.
So we are not aware of what's to come in the first batch of episodes. But do you have any info, any insight or any expectations from certain people this season?
So the season is going to be in Minnesota, Minneapolis. Great city, honestly. If you've never been in Minneapolis, try to go in the summertime, but they have a really nice sky lounge. Have you ever been to Minnesota?
Nah, but my sister-in-law is from there.
Okay.
And that's all I got about it.
It's an efficient city. I thought the food was pretty good. You're able to kind of move around. But anyway, and I ain't going to lie to you, Julian, like I'm a closer in Minnesota. Like the Midwest.
Cleanup crew.
Midwest, I bangs with the Midwest.
I think there's something special about Midwestern women. Yeah. We were briefly talking about this before.
Yeah.
Like the women, the people always say the coastal elites, the LA, the New Yorks, and then even like Miami, people have such an expectation. Their bar is so high. And I'm not saying like the bar in the Midwest, I'm not saying it's low, but I think it's just more rooted in reality.
Yeah.
And people are just more satisfied with like, I guess, the simpler thing, just like the gesture rather than the showmanship of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, look, this is where I'm at financially. This is what I'm comfortable doing. But I want to spend this time and spend this whatever I can and these resources with you. Rather where it's here, it's like you can do those things. But if it's not at the place that's a Michelin star, if it's not at the place where I'm going to get seen around other celebrities, then like it doesn't count. It's like, well, that's not how relationships should work. So
yeah, I agree. It's definitely a lot more simple. I mean, it's not that much to do out there. So they're cool with just Netflix and chilling. They're cool with just coming over. Even the escorting, you know, the escort rates are in Minnesota are a little different.
How's that work? I'm not familiar.
Not familiar with the escort game?
Not anywhere, honestly. No. Really? Definitely really. Not in Minnesota.
Little better rates. That for your pockets.
What is the running rate? Because I'm not gonna lie, man. That whole Skip Bayless, Joy Taylor thing.
Yeah.
I know 1.5. No one's worth 1.5. So like, what is the going rate for an escort? I have no idea.
So it's not like I know all escorts. And the only reason why I know
you're the expert on escorts.
Only reason why I know this is because I have friends in the industry.
You're the pimp.
No. they tell me what it costs an hour. You know what I'm saying? They tell me their bottom line, you know. But the going rate for women that have, I would say, some type of clout is $2,000 an hour.
Two bands an hour.
So these are really like your expensive. These Jesus. Are like your popular OF people. These are like, you know, popular, you know, corn stars and all that stuff.
Great self-censor right there.
Yep, no problem.
Save me an edit. But
the women, like, you know, I'm not saying that Drea or like Barnice who are like escorts or anything like that, but like those kind of valuable, those type of women would probably go for a lot more though, you know?
Okay. And yeah. When you say, is this like pull up purely for sex, or is this like you still have to do the thing where you take them to dinner, you have to do all the shadow, like the pleasantries of a date? Do you have to do that, or is it like just show up to my hotel?
So like I said, I have friends in the industry. But what goes down is there's an application or a website, and then you find this person and you're talking to them. You know, it's a little skeptic because they're like, hey, can we FaceTime you? Because they don't want you being a cop or anything like that. So they just pull up and you have an hour and you want to get kind of to it so you can maximize that full time. Because most of the time when that hour is over, They're out. They want to leave.
Yeah.
You know, the key is to look at the women that would like you in real life, because they will stay longer.
But isn't like a man's judgment always well unfavorably skewed? Like, I know I could bag her, and then she sees you and she's like, I would never touch you with a 10-foot pole. I feel like that's like the misconception, is every dude thinks they can get with the girl, when in fact that is not, more often than not, the case. That's why the money plays such an important role, because it's like, I know I'm a 6. You're a 9, but with this $2,000, you're gonna stay with me for this hour.
See, I agree with that, but you gotta understand, the better she looks, the higher the prices, and some of these prices are a lot. You know, like sometimes, you know, from what my friends tell me, they just want a quick, they want a quick little, what was it? I guess I don't know, exchange. So you might go with the 7, you know, and she might be a little bit cool and have good conversation with her. And now she could be a repeat customer. Now she's getting it for a lower rate, you know, getting a little, you could maybe get another girl and you could get that rate that you got the first time with 2 women, you know?
But my, like, I don't know. Am I crazy? Like, I went to Amsterdam years ago and, I went to the red light district and I would see people like coming in and out of the rooms or whatever. And I just was like I just wanted to see how the culture went, or like how to. And I'm like, okay, obviously you're like, you're window shopping. You're obviously shopping to have like sex. But with that, it's like, if I'm in that situation, or even in this situation, if it's money's involved, I'm going to buy the prime product. It's like going to an Apple store and getting the phone that came out 5 years ago versus the one they dropped today. It's like, I'm putting money into this because it's an investment. I'm going to hook up with the person that's way out of my league because I can pay for it.
Yeah, and that's
like
a good premise.
I'm not trying to pay for someone that looks like I could just pick them up at a bar. Like, the whole point is to pick up someone that would be way out of my thing. Like,
yeah, 100%. I think more for me and the friends that I talk to about this is about their relationships, and also like sometimes those prime women, right? And Julian, I'm sure you experienced this in your life. The best vagina you've got has probably been a 6 or a 7. It has not been the 10s and the 8s or the 9s, because the 9s and the 10s are pillow princesses.
Yeah, there's a lot. I'll give you. There's a lot of hands like I'm here. You're lucky. It's like you're thankful I'm here.
You even think about it. Most of the women in the corn industry, most of them were not 10s. Like, they might be looked as that way. Now they're on TV as frequently you're seeing them. But, you know, most of these women are not the most secure. They have, like, you know, they didn't think they were pretty, which is not saying that that's why they got into the industry. They most of them got on it for financial and they wanted to do it. But, you know, they're not like the 10s, and they give the best, you know, everything, you know, like it's a 10 out of 10, you know. So I've in my life, I'm 31 now, in my 31 years of living, it sucks because you always want the baddie. The baddie makes you feel like, man, I got this. And it's, especially if you get a baddie that has a great personality, yeah, feel like you hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
But more times out of not, it just ain't, it don't be hitting sexually. And I also talked about this too, Julian. And I know we're supposed to talk about Love is Blind. I'm going off
track. No, because I have another follow. This is perfect.
It's perfect. Word. But like, you know, I believe that I have gotten a little bit too much vagina in my life. And it has affected the neurons of how I view the world. It
does. Oh, that's a fact. I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot. The way you phrase that is hilarious, but there's a lot of truth to that. I think there's a lot of misconception and a lot of rewiring you have to do on a neurological level.
Yeah.
Because I was talking about this with a family friend of mine, like a cousin of mine, and he was saying like the even from like the dating apps, like the dopamine receptors, and just like the constant. The constant want of like satisfaction, the constant need of like a hit, a text message, a notification, an alarm. I think we're conditioned to that because we're like the cell phone era. And that even has now matriculated into something that used to be sacred, like intercourse, sexual intercourse. And now it's like, well, now we're even like gamifying that. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, like this was fun. Who's next? It's like, that's ass backwards. It shouldn't be like that.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's, yeah.
Hey, it's the nuances of everything, man. We're just trying to adjust. We're just trying to do the best.
Wait, my last with the escort thing, you said get the 10, but then they just come over to like the hotel, whatever. But if I'm like, I used to live in Chicago. There's a spot in Chicago called the Viagra Triangle, where basically it's a place where there's no public transit. It's all old, rich white men, and they have like drivers, and they're all like men in their 60s, 70s, but they all have women that are 25, 22 to 28, around there. Everyone knows the deal. They go to the steakhouse. They go back to their, you know, waterfront property, Lake Michigan, whatever, and they do their thing. But I know the joy for them comes with bringing these women in public and being seen with a hot younger girl. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, is it really just purely pull up, let's get to the action and then leave? Or is there not a part of these guys, younger guys, not like the old men, where they're like, I want to be seen with the hot girl. Let me bring her somewhere. That's why I'm like, $2,000 to have sex is one thing.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, am I also paying for it? Because if you want to be seen with her, you got to take her out to eat. You got to bring her all these different things. Like, there's a lot more expenses that go. I just don't know if that's like a thing people do.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you can do that. And maybe if you're a repeat customer, you can probably do that. Because essentially, you're just paying for their time. You're just paying for that hour. So if I pay for an escort, I say, hey, let's, you know, do some ATVs. I'm sure she'll be down with it, you know. And she'll be, you know, if I call her.
Yeah, like you want her to be seen with you. It's like, okay, like she's beautiful. Let's fucking skydive. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I think it depends on who you are and stuff like that. You know, I'm kind of the guy like, hey, I'll let you at the hotel. you will not be seen out with me.
I mean, I'm with you. I'm that guy too. But
yeah, I definitely don't want to be. Hey, this is the girl that I paid for.
Yeah. look here,
all my old girls. Look at this, 2000. This is what 2000 got me.
You're just cash apping her right in real time. Every minute, here's $20 a minute, baby. Let's go.
And that's such a dangerous thing. Yeah. And I tell men, right, like, don't pay for vagina. Like, you know, at the end of the day, find women that can like you. But if you're making good money and you don't want to deal with some of the nuances of it, it has a market. And that's why I said that you don't want to go for the tens, because they're going to hit you out your pocket.
Yeah.
And I'm a ROI guy. You know, I don't think that there's vagina that's worth $2,000 an hour. I just don't. And I've had
a depreciating asset.
It's a depreciating asset.
As soon as you take it off the lot.
Especially because I fornicated in that industry and got it for free. So I'm like, well, how much better are you going to be than that girl?
Yeah.
I'm not giving you $2,000. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not even giving $500, you know? But I'll cut that out because I don't want the women that I to know that I don't do that.
No, I know a couple of girls that do this as well, and I feel like the pay game is for married men.
Yeah.
Because it's like, look, you have a job, but I have a family to lose. So, like, I know a couple girls that have done that, and they're very, like, the guy books a hotel. They just, you know, tell the girl the hotel, say, hey, get a card key. I'll leave a key for you. Go to the room, and then, like, you know, on their business lunch break, they'll pop in. hours time and then go about their day. You know, and then they'll chill at the hotel for the day, like stay if you want or go back to your apartment. That's like, I get it in that setting. I mean, it's not condoning it, but like, I understand why that makes sense because like, yo, I got a whole family, I got kids, like you can't come over to any, like just do this shit in the hotel room. Here's your $2,000, go about your life.
Yeah.
And do that every like once a quarter, whatever the hell they do.
Yeah, yeah. So. I mean, yeah, keep it going, man. But that's an interesting topic, man. Married men and what they do to keep their marriage going. And I just saw this one little context where it said that side women really keep marriages together. And it's a scary world out here, man.
It's funny.
Side pieces. Sorry, not side women, side pieces.
I noticed one girl that does this, and she's like a career woman. She doesn't like it, but it's expensive to live in New York. Like people do other things. I'm not knocking someone for getting it how they live, but she does this, but she also has a...
She escorts?
Yeah. Okay. She has a not-for-profit business that she created, that she started.
What she's giving out?
And no. Like this is like a legit thing. Like it's not like, you know, yeah, it's not that. But she, I forget what her cause is, but... She, instead of him paying her, like, you know, like whatever the rate is, the guy donates to her non-for-profit. So like he's making like monthly donations of like thousands of dollars. So she's like raising a lot of money to go to something amazing. Like, great. No one, I'm sure, knows how they're getting the money or like where it's coming from. They just think there's like this like angel investor, angel donor that keeps giving them money month and month over. But like she's using the escort industry as a reason to like really help a lot of people, which I think is pretty cool.
That's pretty genius, honestly, especially if she could get some type of government
and he gets a tax write, because on his tax returns, whatever, it looks like he's just donating to a charity, so he's getting kickback. Like they're both, it's like perfect.
She's a genius.
She's getting off, he's literally, they're both getting off. He's cheating on his family. We don't need to talk about that. But he is doing charitable work and he's writing it off.
That's what I'm trying to say, Drew. And this is what I was talking about with Love is Blind.
Yeah.
This is a topic that I've been trying to talk about. About I'd be leaving married men be cheating all the time. Yeah. And you know, I want to be, you know, I, of course, I did Love is Blind. I wanted love and I want to be married. Like, I still would love to have a family. I would love to be married. But, like, when I was doing the show, you know when you're about to do something and then like, I don't know if you believe in God or any type of higher us, but like, it's almost like everything was, I was getting the answers that I need. It was just like married men coming up to me like, yeah, I've been married for 40 years. And I asked them like, hey man, like, are you faithful? Are you happy? They'd be like, well, when it comes to happiness, you got to do what you got to do to make your wife happy. And you just get these answers and just like, bro, marriage just does not sound like fun for the man. Like, I was kind of getting, like, reassurance from men, like,
Probably for the women, too. I think it's just, like, something that's, like...
Women make it sound good.
I think they're better at convincing themselves that it's good.
Yeah.
Like, I think men are... We are more... I think women are just conditioned to deal with emotions more and process those emotions more. I think men physically act on those things. So it's like, I'm uncomfortable. I have to hit something. Yeah. It's like, women are like, well, let's not resort to that. Let's talk through this. Whereas men are like, I don't like this anymore. I'm going to fuck my neighbor.
Yeah. Like, or not go home, or I'm just gonna work all fucking night and not go home to my family. That's, I'm gonna be miserable. I'm just not gonna go home. You know, that's what they be doing. And
so true.
It's just like, I'm just like, bro, is it better being single? Like, cause I want a family, but like,
when I do I look, too, man. When I really look, do.
But like, I really want the family. Like, I'm gonna be honest with you, bro. Like, for like the aesthetic of it, like, I'll be in sometimes, like, you know, I'm in tech sales. Yeah. I remember I was meeting the CIO. And he said, do you have a wife? And I said, no. And it was kind of like, it was like a little bit of a, my powers kind of went away where it was like, not my powers, but like points kind of got deducted.
Yeah, I feel they, that.
Men of power like you to be married and stuff like that. But in the same end, when they find a man that's single, especially black men that are married and they see another black dude that's single and they think he's suave, oh, they cannot wait to tell you about the reminiscing stuff they used to do, the women they used to talk to, or what you doing in your life. They want to live your life. So I just be, with married men, I'm going to need them pages where married men are like, man, I love my wife and this is what I do to be happy. Because every time the men that are faithful, they sound so miserable. Like they go to, like, it's like, only thing they could tell me is, I gave it up to God.
Bro, especially like in this industry, like being in the music and entertainment, like I've seen, you know, artists, managers, people like that I'm very close with or used to be close with or like, you know, publicly the faithful guy or just had a kid or whatever the case may be. And then it's like, you know, you just like, God forbid you leave your city and you go on road with like, you see how people, you're like, oh, Like, damn.
Yeah.
I thought you were like.
Yeah.
You, I thought and you that's were what, yeah, because it's like, I know I'm rare in this case where, yeah, like, I grew up in a very loving household. I'm, yeah, sure my parents never were younger. I know there's probably some shit that I don't need to know about. But
yeah,
point is, my parents are still together. Very loving, supportive, all that rosy shit that, yeah, like, most people don't have the experience with. And I thought that that was normal until I went to college. But then I get into this industry, and even more, it's like every time I think, it's like the layers just keep getting ripped. And I'm like, oh, like, even the people that are like, the public perception, the facade is so strong that, like, I bought into it, even though I know you personally. And, yeah, then as soon as we leave the city, and as soon as we go anywhere, it's like you're a whole, you're a, like, to your point of like your colleague, like, I'm losing respect for it. It's like, damn, I fucking, yeah, what the hell, man?
Yeah. And it's like, especially, like, if you know their spouse, yeah, too, it's, yes, like, weird.
It's like, I don't want to be like, I know, yeah, you're not putting me in the middle of it, yeah, but it's like, they're, it's awkward, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, mm-hmm, do this, and then we'll come over for dinner, and then,
yeah,
staring at your wife. Mm-hmm. Like, we were just, you were just tag teaming. Yeah. Like, weird, bro.
It's weird.
Like,
it's weird. It's weird. Like,
but I guess that's normal. And, yeah, then that's what sucks, is that is the normal behavior,
yeah,
which I hate. I don't, yeah, want that to be like the standard. But
yeah, same. And, you know, it is a little bit weird, but like, that's why for me, bro, I'm not going to force a relationship. Like, for me, it's like, the person I'm going to marry is going to be my best friend. It's going to be like a, yeah, that friendship aspect has to be there. And I know I'm kind of going on a tangent.
No,
I'm
going on. Dude, we can talk whatever the fuck we want to talk about.
But like, you know, that person got to be my best friend, bro. Because there's no way I'm going to be married to somebody and I'm thinking about the next chick. Like,
yeah,
like, I just feel like that's miserable.
But I think a lot of that comes from within as well, to your point of like the conditioning of hooking up with a girl and then moving on to the next one, then moving on to the next one. You have to. These are bad habits that we've developed. You have to unlearn that habit. Mm-hmm. And that's not just going to come because you met the perfect woman. It's going to come of you meeting that person, but then also like making the difficult decision time over and time again, no matter when you're at home, when you travel, wherever you are, just meeting someone, she's beautiful, and saying to yourself every time, yes, I could do this. Yes, this is something that I would love to do, but I have to prioritize the person that I love, the person I'm like building my life with and have a family with. Like, I think a lot of people think like when they find the one, then like that thing gets shut off, and nothing gets shut off. Yeah. Like, as if someone that's pretty open about like former addiction and stuff, like,
yeah,
it's never a switch. You have to just unlearn bad behavior.
Yeah.
And like, that's a lifelong process, because I'm seeing like the men in their 50s or late 40s, whatever, that are still like, yeah, I could smash that if I wanted to. It's like, bro, like, and I'm, yeah, looking at them like, you're, yeah, like 20 years out of your prime. Like, what is this? But it's, yeah, like, yo, you don't just unlearn that. Like, that's, mm-hmm, who you are.
Yeah.
Men, you're like, I'll beat. It's like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just, but how that's we the are. Thing,
Julian, it's like, we're not really transparent about that. And
not at all.
40-year-old men are not transparent about it. So it's like, we feel like it's supposed to be like some type of switch, and it never is. And so you're just going down this forever cycle of just like, you're kind of still the same immature person from when you're 21.
Yeah. I had that Raya dating app that everyone glamorizes. It's the worst dating app ever.
Really?
But it's awful. But like, you're looking at it and it's like, you know, a lot of like successful people. And but the Raya app's interesting because it has men and women. You don't like, there's no like preference. It just shows you who's on the app near you. So you'll be going through like your neighborhood, whatever, and like, it's not, when you're looking for potential matches, it just shows you the sex that you want. But if you have the map open and you can see guys and girls that are on it, and I'll be like looking through the neighborhoods and I'm looking at guys that are like peers of Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. Like, these aren't guys that are like, these are men in their 50s. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, is this it's ridiculous to me. Is it not ridiculous to you that you're on here? Like, is this, where does that lie? And also, like, all your photos are with Jay-Z. You make it very clear that you're like, you've been around the block. Like, that's your homie. Like, it's just odd to me that these guys that are like, I have nothing against like, you know, the gray hair look, that's dope, all that shit, but it's like, yo, if half your photos are from like 20 years ago, or if like, you know, it's you,
you're kind of catfish.
It's like, what are you doing here, bro? Like, mm-hmm, you're the old guy in the club. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Why are you still here?
Identity crisis.
It's not cool to be here still.
It's not. It's
like,
not.
Everyone, I make fun of the shitty bars, mm-hmm, on the Lower East Side of New York where all the interns go, because now I'm in my 30s and I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
But I also was that at one point and I did that because, yeah, that was where I was in my life.
Yeah.
It would look insane if I was still going to those places today.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
You got to evolve.
You have to evolve. You have to age out of shit. You have to become a fucking adult. Mm-hmm. No, I feel like a lot of people are afraid to become an adult.
But also, too, I'm going to give some people some type of credit. When some relationships hinder your growth, you know? So then when you finally are out of it, now that is like your first, like, of you kind of growing and stuff like that. But yeah. I agree with you. I believe that there's a lot of people who never grow. And it's like, and that's, and at the end of the day, for anybody, you constantly have to grow. Like, I don't want to be the same clay that I was 5 years from now. And like, that's the, that's what I try to strive for.
I would
for
hate to be me 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Exactly. I wouldn't be here if it was me 5 years. It would be awful. Like,
but when I talk to my friends that are married and they got kids, their whole life is around that premise. Like, my boy, I kick it with him all the time.
Yeah.
He said, bro, last year was one of the hardest years ever. He just had his child. His child's about to be almost one. He said, bro, I feel, I don't know my identity. Like, my identity is literally waking up and taking care of my child and making sure that my child is okay. And like, yeah, I'm happy I got my family, but it's like, I used to do things with my friends. I used to do all this other stuff. So that identity, like, you kind of always have to like look at yourself in the mirror and be like, who am I?
Yeah.
Because like, that identity could get lost so quickly.
It can, but like, also, like, I mean, with a kid in particular, like, you're not the priority anymore. Like, these are decisions that you and your spouse, your partner made. Like, you brought a life into the world. That's your thing. That's your priority. I'm not saying like shelf your whole life, shelf your existence, but you gotta, like, it's the baby, man. The baby can't do shit at all.
I know.
Except shit itself. Literally shit. That's all it can do. You gotta like do every, and that's, yeah, that, I mean, that's a learning curve. One of my best friends from college just has a kid. He's, I think he's just turned one. No, he's turning two.
Yeah.
He's at that age. And it's like seeing him and his wife go through that transformation together, and just like, he's very honest with how that's been like good and difficult, and I'm like, I can't even,
yeah,
like, I spent an afternoon with the, them and their son, and I was just like, this is like,
it's too much.
I can't even fathom,
bro. I was with my friend and like I was probably at my boy's house for like an hour, and I'll try to help him out with like holding the baby.
Yeah,
the baby's heavy. First of all,
yeah,
you got to constantly always entertain, always gotta be the movement. Kid
there's gotta be,
it's
movement.
Always gotta be moving. I'm like, bro, like, how are you doing? Is like, he has a two-parent household. Like, him and his wife both switch off. I'm just like, how do single parents do this?
Yeah. Oh.
Like, I understand what them women, they be bitter with men. I understand now. Them women that be single, they got one kid, and they hate men. Like, I get it. I kind of get it.
Now there's, like, also the incentive structure on, like, economical, like the American system. Like, it, no one's paid enough to live. No one's paid enough to raise a family at that. So, with that, like, we're, you know, in our 30s, early 30s, 25, 26 used to be like the barrier of like, okay, I have a kid, I have a family, this is my life, this is like what we're doing, because I can afford it. I can work two jobs, I can do other things, so can my wife, and we can raise a kid happily.
Yeah.
Now, like, people are just, it's tough to live alone. Mm-hmm. So the thought of even like integrating another life into that, not even like a child, but also a spouse's, is like, yo, where does this money come from? Because it's not accessible. It's not like, I don't want those things. I would love those things. But it's easy for people like us, I'm definitely speaking for myself, to shelf the ideal wife and kid stuff because I literally don't think I could afford any of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas that used to not be the case, you know, however many years ago. It's like, why don't I feel like this stuff is even possible to someone like me, which is scary. It's like the barrier of entry shouldn't be like you have to be astronomically wealthy to have a freaking kid in this country. That's insane.
No, it is. It is. And it's constantly, the prices are constantly going up. But Julian, you just need to move out of New York. You'll be fine.
Nah, man. I love, that's the problem. Like, this is the thing about not having kids. I can still be selfish. It's like, I love it here. I love my life here. I'll continue to move shoebox to shoebox, climbing five flights of stairs every damn day. I have stronger glutes than Saquon Barkley. Like, I will do this because I'm single and I can.
Yeah.
And I don't mind paying a premium for what New York has given me career-wise, friendship-wise, like opportunity-wise. But I'm saying all this now. I'm sure, like, yeah, like, maybe at some point it'll run its course. Yeah. Maybe when I am at the wife and kids phase and I'm like, okay, money, this is it. Like, I got to use this money for them. I can't pour it into a rent where I might have a washer dryer.
Or my dreams.
Damn, bro. Clay, we're going to take a quick break to talk about today's sponsor, Ferg's Coffee. Our good friends out in LA, named after the adorable dog Ferg's, whose full name is Fergie Fergalicious Ferguson the Ferg's. That's the cutest thing I've ever heard. You guys, I'm an avid coffee drinker. I drink coffee every morning. And if I'm not drinking coffee, I'm drinking matcha. Ferg's is a product that is heavy in my rotation. In the summer, I'm a big matcha guy. It's a little lighter. I love the color. It just seems a little more like spring, summery. This is, they also produce matcha powder. This is their matcha. I'm a big fan of their matcha product. And obviously Fergie, the little cute dog, is on the cover of it. Shout out to her. We love Fergs. If you're a starter to coffee drinking, I always recommend starting light. You can always build your way up. The light roast here, these beans are produced in Brazil. Their producers are fourth generation coffee growers, which is incredible. And the flavor palette here, listen to this. If you're just getting into coffee and you're also happy to be down with cacao powder, raspberry lemonade, and passion fruit. This is just a great entry point. Who doesn't enjoy those things? And there's just like, why not start slow, ease your way into the door? Now, once you have a full beard and you're up to the level of just, you're a boss at this stuff, you got to bring out the French press, which this is my new French press. I'm obsessed. I love it. Get a French press because this is how I treat my coffee. Even though you should probably do a pour over for the light roast. But for your dark roast, you get a French press, bring out these bad boys. Same producers, same farmers from Brazil. Listen to this flavor palette. Baker's chocolate, orange, caramel, raspberry. This is a dark roast. I love a dark roast coffee, especially when I'm doing it in my French press. It's just a great combo. This is my nearly every morning combo. Big fan of the dark roast and the French press. This is like our wild card, get freaky, just send it sleeper. Probably my most favorite, and it's like a treat for me, coffee bean. This is, guys, the name is Colombia Bubblegum. I mean, when you think of Colombia, I think of fun. And bubblegum is just, it's, you think of happiness. The flavor palette for the Colombia bubblegum is plum, blackberry, tangerine, and cacao nibs. Now, this is also a light roast. So if you are getting into it and you want to start easy, go with the light roast. Why not? I mean, the packaging is beautiful. I love the blue. Fergs has just been, you know, a great supplier of coffee. The owner's been in the scene for over 10 years. And he took a risk, started his own company. And I got to support. I'm here to support. If you want all of these products and more, they also do these awesome ceramics. I love these cups that they make. I really want to order a couple. Anyway, you can check out all of their products at www.fergscoffeeroasters.com. That's Fergs, F-E-R-G-S, coffeeroasters.com. They also have an Instagram, fergs.coffee. There you can see all their products, photos of cute little baby Fergs, the dog that we're all obsessed with, and get your hand on some of these products. All right, guys, and let's get back to the episode.
Man, there's a lot going on at the start of this year. It's just been so many different things. And I honestly feel like sometimes with the presidency and all these new changes, there's like, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I believe there's just sometimes a little bit of distractions. Like for Trump to come in and the first thing he does is eliminate DEI. And then just like, I don't, you know, me, Julian, I worked in corporate. I don't even believe there is DEI. Like, I don't believe that these corporate companies ever wanted to adopt DEI. Like, I remember when I was working, I was at one of the best tech companies out there during 2020. And I remember when the whole George Floyd thing happened and just the fake, like, concern that they had of like, oh, Clay, are you okay? And
I was
like,
yeah. Bro. How can we make sure our only black employee feels seen?
It's like,
you want lunch? Yeah. Like,
what? I told one of my managers was super cool. My first line manager was cool. I just say, yo, it's Carrie, man. We don't got to have this conversation. Like, let's just be cool to me. Be cool.
Yeah.
Like,
if you get it, you don't make it a thing.
Let's not make it a thing. Let's just try to get this money and whatnot. But yeah, my ADHD is kicking in because I forgot why I brought that up. But
well, no, I mean, to go with what you just say, I was at Atlantic when, that George Floyd incident happened. Yeah. And that was where the industry did the blackout, the squares thing. And that was actually started by two women that are black that work for Atlantic. And that was like a great movement. But I did see a lot of the industry and a lot of players, because, you know, if you can be honest, like a lot of the people that run these record labels are white.
Yeah.
And they're profiting off of a lot of, you know,
black trauma.
Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of like, yeah, a lot of those, like, we were always remote, but it was always, you know, hey, our line's always open if you want to, you know, if you got any inquiry, or hey, if you're feeling this way, or hey, you can be late to the meeting if you want. It's okay. It's like a lot of that coaxing where it's like, don't, this preferential weird, it's like the weird treatment that you do. It's not genuine.
Yeah, it's not.
It, like, how many, you had to watch a black dude get his neck fucking collapsed and on for 7 minutes for then to email me and be like, yeah, just in case you've ever got anything you want to talk about. That's what I had. That's okay. So that's the barrier. That's before we get to the check-in and someone has to die. Gotcha.
And it just wasn't genuine with anything. Like, even the Black Lives Matter movement wasn't genuine. Like, everything to me is just all capitalistic. And I think that we just, hey, we live in America and we have to understand that everything is for profit. If you kind of understand that, nothing kind of like tricks you out. Like, even what you talked about with this whole penny thing, it's just a money play for the rich, you know, or for the people who's in that production. Cause I'm like, I'm not really like, I don't know, like, I don't really deal with pennies like that. So I would think it doesn't directly like, but I'm sure that it does. Like, I'm sure it does.
Ramifications, I'm sure it's ramifications that we can't even comprehend. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure like, you know, taxes wise, you know, taxes round up to a certain amount, you know, hey, eliminate some taxes.
I do think you said like the Black Lives Matter. I think with a lot of movements, DEI included, I think a lot of them are rooted and started. It sucks because it seems like the more steam and the more smoke a movement gets, that's founded in good ideology and it has a purpose and it's serving people that are underprivileged or minorities. The juxtaposition of it is perfect. It's great. But then when it becomes profitable and it climbs up that American corporate ladder, that's when the powers that be kind of muddy the waters. And then that's where everything that pops off in this country eventually gets hit with that like capitalist, you know, wand. And then it's like, all right, now siphon money? How do we do the thing? It's like, it's hard to stay good when the system itself will always trick you into becoming the problem. Like you're going to be the problem at some point. You're never going to stay in the clear. This great idea in execution will eventually get turned into some capitalistic nonsense where it's about profit. And we'll, you know, prop up the mission statement, but like, we're not really, come on. Mm-hmm. Like, I need another house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got bills to pay. I got to worry about this damn kid and put my dream away to put him in college. This little nigga who won't even do anything in life.
Gotta give him a chance, Clay.
Gotta get this nigga. Like, nigga, why don't you go to a Votech school or
get a skill?
Get a skill. Get a trade. Go to trade school. Learn how to be a plumber. I think master plumbers are making hella money right now. I think when I get a kid, hey, nigga, you doing sports, you learn how to be a plumber.
Yeah, that's like a whole skill set. That's there's a whole South Park special about that. They're talking about like the whole bit is like the episode follows the arc of the new man is like taking your phone and calling a task rabbit or like taking your phone and having another man do something for you. Yeah. And they're like basically the people that, you know, do what we do, like work in, have like a white collar corporate job, their skills there's nothing, they have nothing to offer, and the real people that are eating are all the plumbers and like mechanics and people that like use tools and can physically actually get stuff done. I don't, this is not a transition at all. What's up, what do you feel about Drake, man? I just want to know your thoughts, because the album, again, we're recording before the album comes out.
Drake and Party Next Door album comes out. I'm excited about that tomorrow album,
Before you get into your, I'm very much excited for the album. I obviously love Drake, love P&D. They have not had a record that's bad together. I'm not too crazy about the snippets I've heard, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think it's leaning very heavy into P&D sound. And I know a lot of people are going to say, like, well, that's because the album's coming out through Sony. That's through his label. That none of that matters. Mm-hmm. None of that has anything to do with how the sound is put out and what album's put out. Drake obviously has the final say on everything. But I'm curious. I think this is smart by Drake because it's not just Drake's music, so it'll be judged as a collab album, mm-hmm. and it alleviates the pressure. I don't think this is going to flop. I think it'll be a great project, but I think it alleviates the stress of like the first week numbers tag, the charting tag. Like, it kind of alleviates Drake of like the stress of just going out there alone. It's like, it's me and my guy. Like, this is my partner and I are doing something together. Like, this is a fun venture for us. It has nothing to do with everything that just happened for the past year.
Yeah.
So,
I think that it's comfortable for Drake as well because it's more of an R&B lane.
Yes.
So it's not like he's anticipated to address everything, which I know was what everybody wants to see. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, I believe that you make music for women, it's always going to be profitable. And I know for me, when you make R&B songs or you make songs that I could play around women, it's getting played around me. So I think it's a really good play. Like you said, that was a beautiful point. I never even thought about that. Like, just from the non-pressure perspective of Party Next Door puts out the album. I don't have to worry about like the first week numbers. I don't have to worry about the pressure following up after Kendrick just did the Super Bowl. I could kind of put out a good album. And if it has good music and it's, you know, Drake, from a universal perspective, I think more of the common rap fans like Drake more than Kendrick.
Yeah.
I think more of the hip hop fans, if you're like rooted in hip hop, or more Kendrick fans. But it's no lie that Drake makes more universal music that could kind of get played around 100%. Everywhere.
I think people, because I think because I've been coming off my previous situation, I've been so honest with my thoughts on this whole beef. I think because now I'm just like more to freely speak, people think I'm like pro team. I'm pro both of them. But yeah. People think I'm like Kendrick. Da, da, da. I can just be honest. Kendrick won the beef. Yes. I listen to Drake's music significantly more.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always going to be more excited and more anticipating a Drake release. And I think your point's right. I'm sure he'll do some rapping, but this isn't a rap album. Mm-hmm. So we can't really judge it for, damn, did he bar down? Like, he's probably going to be singing every fucking song, which is great. I love singing Drake. Give me more melodies and hooks. Like, I don't care necessarily, like, who he does the collab with. I just want more. If there's more Drake music, awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm just, I don't know.
I think, you know, a lot of times when you're doing stuff in the social media world, time could seem like forever. And Drake, is Kendrick beef has seemed like it's been forever. Like, honestly, this has dragged out so much.
It's been 7 months now.
And I can't imagine, you know, I'm sure Drake has been a POS in his life. But I'm sure he's been going through it. You know, 7 months of being in a limelight, everything you do is kind of being watched. Like,
can't do a damn thing.
Can't do a damn thing, you know? So, you know, I think that this album is going to be good to, like, the redemption of Drake, because I don't think Drake is going anywhere. I do think that we won't hear Drake in the same capacity with his new relationship with UMG. For some reason, man, it's hard fighting against the man, bro. It's hard fighting against the system.
Well, it's not built for anyone to challenge.
I mean, Kanye's fighting against it. And I would say Kanye's probably being successful in the selling perspective, but not public perception.
But even how he's fighting it is like, no one, this can come off so wrong. Like, cut through all the Nazi propaganda and all that stuff, and even like the anti-Semitism. There are certain things he's saying about the industry that need to be addressed. Just how he's getting the attention riled up for those things is awful. It's like, bro, like, you had it and you could have been the person to do it. But the things you said, the 200 tweets you said before, the one smart thing just kind of makes your point null and void. Like, you ruined it. You have the momentum. You have the money. You have the clout. You have the attention. But you fucking are selling shirts with these swastikas. Like, I can't take you seriously, bro. I can't be like, that's when he's right.
Yeah.
You ruined it.
And selling shirts with like Sean John.
Yeah, you're saying, like, free puff. Like, it's like you killed your own credibility. It's like, you could be the person that stands up. You faced Adidas.
Yeah.
You've, you know,
faced a record label.
Faced a record label. Like, you've had chances where you fought and won, but I can't jump out for you if you're saying this irrational, wild shit. That's like, these aren't even like business things. These are like people. Like,
humanistic,
you know,
human
stuff. Yeah, it's, you're fucking up human
existence. And I'm a big Kanye fan. Like, Kanye is my favorite rapper of all time. Like, Graduation changed
still,
my life.
Same.
You know, in college, just bumping Graduation. Like, I Wonder is my favorite song. So it's hard to see.
Great record.
Yeah, great record, man. it's hard to see, like, everything that Kanye's doing. But also, too, Kanye's used to kind of getting that click. So it's like repeated behavior, right? And also, I always try to speak for athletes. When you are doing well in life, there's not a lot of people that's going to tell you no, because they are benefiting off of being next to you. So for an athlete, I'm sure for Kanye West, you know, you're not getting people who's going to discipline you or tell you stuff. You might be the public perception, but at the end of the day, you're still getting that dopamine of results.
Yeah.
So for Kanye West, he puts out Donda and it does well. He doesn't sell it on a regular DSPs. He sells it on, he has a website. Eventually goes on Apple Music and stuff. But he makes hella money off of that. So now he's rewarded with, oh, fuck these guys. Like, they counted me out and now I'm winning. So I can understand how that changes his mindset for him to double down even more.
Of course.
You know, even for an athlete perspective, right? Where sometimes they're like, why is he acting like that? Well, he's never been told no. He's been a winner his whole life and people have always wanted to get around him. I'm not saying that is an excuse for his behavior, but I'm saying I understand it.
But even if you think with someone like Kanye in a particular case, like, the thing with him is, like, when he has been told no, he's come back even stronger and more successful Then like take the Grammy situation with Taylor Swift. He hides away and then drops My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. That's his welcome back moment. He drops a classic album. Like, everyone told me, no, you're out. Here's a fucking classic album. Okay, the whole thing with the shoes with Nike. Awful situation. That blows up. You're done here. Fashion, we don't want you here. Goes to Adidas. Changes that entire corporation. Makes them, you know, relevant again. Drops, like, the hottest shoe for however many years. It's like, even when he's told no, it's by these incredibly large conglomerates, and he still comes back bigger and better. The Gap collab. Mm-hmm. You're still not welcome in this industry. Fuck it. I'll go to Gap. Boom. Sells out all the, like, you're dealing with someone that, not only to your point, isn't getting told no by the people that work with him and know him personally, but like, when he is told no, he gets so motivated and fueled to prove them otherwise that he's like, I'm going to do this. You're not going to tell, like, it's going to happen. My creative motivation and my hatred for you is fueling me to do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah. And I've been reading this book. It's called Millionaire Mind. So it's like the psychology of your experiences dictate how you move about things, right? Mm. So like you just said, every time Kanye has gotten to know, he's done better. He's been comfortable in that kind of revenge kind of standpoint.
I think he finds a lot of comfort in that zone.
He's very comfortable with, hey, you don't think I could do it? Watch, I'm gonna prove it to you. Like, I've watched, what was this documentary on Netflix?
Oh yeah, the Genius.
Something like that. It was just all of like, hey,
even his intro into rap. You're a beat maker. Just make beats.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
And I love that about Kanye, because I'm big onto manifestation. I think Kanye speaks a lot of stuff into existence. So there's a lot of good stuff about Kanye. It just, man. And I don't even think he'd be meaning some of the stuff he'd be saying.
The problem is I do. He's done it enough where it's like, you never really had a pass. And in the past, when people were like, well, he's bipolar, you have to understand that this is some of these albums, which, again, bipolar doesn't make you a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just things that, to me, are just like, you cross it, you're done. Like, I'm sorry, you can't put out a song. But
I
just hate
that. The only thing I say, Julian, this is just, this is my bias. And because at the end of the day, wrong is wrong. But I hate how when black people do wrong, they're canceled. But when a white person does the same thing, it doesn't get talked about. So they want to make up a point about, oh, Kanye said some anti-Semitism stuff. And I saw some guy say, hey, we need to take Kanye music off of Apple Music and Spotify. But then you're going to be cool with Elon Musk doing the full squat sale, like, sign. And it's like his stock is going crazy. Like, I bought more Tesla stocks. Like, there's no consequences, bro. Like, there's no consequence. Even think about Bill Cosby. Then look at, what's my man name? Kevin Spacey. What's the other guy that used to drug women that, Harvey Weinstein, you know? Like, No consequences for white men that do the same exact thing. R. Kelly goes to jail. And I'm not saying these guys are good men. I'm just kind of giving you, hey, for every bad black guy, I could give you a white man, and I could tell you that there's different consequences for both.
Yeah, but I mean, now you're just talking about systematic racism. Like, yeah, yeah. They're bad, but their friends are the people that make the decisions. Yeah. So like, you know, hey, that's my, we made a lot of money together. You let them go.
Black men don't make mistakes, because you won't recover like your white counterpart.
Definitely will not.
It's the worst when you got white friends too. Then you got to explain to them.
Bro, the funniest thing, this happened to me during the Black Lives Matter, I was here. So I went to like a lot of the marches, and I participated in a lot of like the protests. And there was one that was a biking one. It was like, yo, we're riding from, you know, Brooklyn through, it was all over the city. And I'm riding, and my friend of mine, and he's a white guy, but he's with the shit. He's great. Yeah. And we end up talking to this one guy has a low tire pressure, and he's like, yo, do you mind? He noticed my pump on my bike. And I was like, yeah. So we pull over, help him pump up, and he's like, yo, I'm going to run in here and grab us some beers. You guys want beers? And my friend's like, yeah, like, whatever. So then, like, he goes in the store, and we're, like, in the street, you know, but there's, like, hundreds of bikers. The roads are kind of blocked off. And he comes out, and he, like, hands us a beer, and they're just, like, they just crack in the middle of the street, start drinking. And I was like, nah. They're like, nah, come on, dude, have a beer. I'm like, nah, I'm not going to just open container right now in the middle of Brooklyn, like, outside where there's 100 cops. Yeah. Around. Like, I'm not going to be the one black guy that has an open beer container. And they just look at me like, oh yeah, we never even think about, like, there's just like things that you don't have to think about, or things you have to like abide by, because certain rules don't apply to you, and you get the pass on a lot of things. Like, yes, he has an open container and he's out in the pub, but like, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
I can't do that. Yeah. Like, I can't. And they, like, I think it's funny because we're in the middle of a protest. We're in the middle of a thing that kind of like brings attention to those things. But even in that moment, they still couldn't, until it happened, they weren't able to like comprehend that, like, oh, you, this is a different game for you. I'm like, yeah, like, we're both living life. We're both literally in New York on this block right now, but we have very, 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 very different experiences.
Yeah.
Enjoy the beer. I can't do that right now. Yeah. Do it later when I'm home.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm on the lake, you know, and that's a white man's business. So, like, I'm out there late at night and, you know, like, there's a lot of rules.
You can be a black man on a boat out there, man.
Yeah. And I got people I'm hosting and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a different game. But, yeah, man, you got to learn how to code switch, man. Are you a good code switcher?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Some would say too hard. Some think I'm fucking white. No, it was a wake up call. I went to a very, like, my, where I grew up was diverse as shit.
Yeah.
And predominantly black, like high school. It was like, fine. I was like, sick. This is real life. And then I go to college. I went to like a private liberal arts college. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
I'm not. Yeah, I got, I know. I know who I am here. Yeah. And it was, that was a very difficult. When you're young, when I was like 17, you know, you go onto a campus like that and your instinct is to assimilate. So then you get like, you know, the Sperry shoes, the pastels, and you try to like send it fully like, oh, I belong. And then like a year of that, or even maybe even 2 years of that, you're like, well, this isn't the fuck. This isn't who I am. I'm like a, you know, a junior at this point. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Like, this is lame. Like, I'm not the weird, like, this is corny. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's good people here and I like, but the system and like the culture of this is not. A, it's definitely not real life. I mean, it's literally the college I went to is situated on a hill that looked down on the local people. It was like, it could not have been more of like a fairy tale in the sense that it's like the elites are physically on a hill. It's called Lafayette College.
Okay. I ran there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great facilities.
Yeah. Yep.
The elites are physically on a hill and everyone's directly beneath us. And God forbid a local walks their way up the hill. Then it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Was that a
here?
Fun school? Lafayette?
I had a very interesting time there. Yeah. In short, there were moments that were fun, okay. But like I also was there in like a transition of power phase where they brought in this president that was trying to like, basically he wanted to make it as closely academically rigorous because it was like a top 30 private liberal arts college, but he wanted to crack the threshold of like Ivy League status. So he basically came in and had a mission of kind of wiping frats off, kind of erasing Greek life in like social culture and making it more of just like a nerd focused school. So my class and my friends, the people that I knew, were kind of like the last beacon of, we're smart, but we also like to have fun. Like, we do shit. Like, we like to drink. We like to have, you know, parties and stuff. And that was like, you know, a lot of us got in trouble. And it was just like a whole, like, you know, it was a difficult time.
I understand. Yeah, I understand. Y'all were the rebels of the school, essentially.
Yeah, and they won. They got rid of all damn near everything.
Damn.
Yeah, man. Which actually is kind of, in hindsight, makes it look like I went to. My school was great, but like, now they keep climbing up the charts. I'm like, yeah, I went to like a top 15 school. You know,
like, it means more in a resume.
Yeah, it means more now. I'm like, dang, you know, might as well have been Princeton. You know what I'm saying? Like, but how was your experience? I mean, you know, you had probably a more fun, a little looser.
Well, you would think,
the
right?
Sports thing, though. I mean, yeah, that's always tough.
Yeah, because I was an athlete, so you know, we would get up at 6 a.m. to work out with cross countries. So with the cross country team, I ran track. I ran 400 meters. No one knew, but we would get up at 6 a.m. do our little workout. I'll have my first class at 10. Practice is at 3 p.m. You got to weight lift at like 6 p.m. Then until your junior year with over a 3.4, you still have to do tutoring. You know, my junior year, I had a 3.3. I ended up graduating 3.5.
That's so obnoxious. Yeah. You're right there.
Yeah, I was right there. it sucked. So, yeah, man, you after you're done with, you know, eating, which is like around like, I would say 7, maybe 6:30, 7 p.m., you got like an hour, then you have to go to study hall. So your day is pretty slam-packed with, you know, mundane things. But, you know, I had fun being an athlete. Like, you find like the pleasures and the time that you do have.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still texting. I'm still like, hey, come over to my house and come over to my dorm at like 9:30. And I'm having a fun ass time from like 9:30, 10:30. And then go to sleep, wake up, do it again.
My track career was cut short. I did jump. I was long and triple jump. And what meet was it? I think it was an indoor meet.
Armory?
I think it was at Lehigh.
Oh, Lehigh, okay.
When it was a meet we had with them. It was like, I think our fourth or fifth meet of the year.
That was a flat track, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I tore my patella.
There?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I, during a jump, like I'm running, taking off for a, yeah. it was either a long, I think it was a long jump. I think it might have been my last jump of the day. And I tore it mid-jump, crashed into the pit, slammed into the pit.
Oof.
And then...
you knew immediately?
Oh, immediately. Because it was always, my knee was always sensitive and it felt weird. And yeah. I was like, something isn't Oof. Right. Yeah. And it happened there. My parents are there, a coach there, the whole medic team. Ended up getting surgery. Luckily, it was just arthroscopic, but okay. I don't think they like, knocked it out the park. Because it's still to this day, you know, fuck, over 10 years later, it's still very sensitive to the touch. Like when I play basketball, I wear a sleeve. Like I'm very conscious about mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of that is the mental versus the physical, mm-hmm. but then it didn't end up. I'd rehabbed a little bit of comeback, but like I basically just like gave up track after that, yeah. and then I lived like a normal student life. But I do remember like the grind, the practices, and even freshman year, of course, all freshmen automatically, the study hall was like a big thing. We had to do like mandatory study halls, and it was like my whole life was just like ba 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 ba. All my friends like having fun, going to parties, day drinking. I'm just like,
yeah,
I can't have a beer. I have a 2-hour lift in like an hour. Like, yep. I can't do this. Anything. Like I can't do anything.
The most fun,
which I honestly would have been better for me.
Yeah, would have. I know. You probably need a little more discipline.
I needed that.
The most fun I had was when I tore my hamstring, because I was 5 years at USC just because I tore my hamstring.
Oh, really?
So I did a 5th year senior year. That was my true senior year where, you know, I was in school. Cause my 5th year, I didn't do nothing. Like I just kind of just like, I took one class and was eligible. Yeah. But that 4th year, my senior year, bro, when I was able to stay back, party with the student, man, that was the funnest shit. That's when I got into marijuana. That's when I started drinking. Like it was just.
Having that experience in college is something special, man. Like, I don't want to sound like the glory days, but like that is really is a very.
What, getting exposed to drugs?
Well, not just the drug, but I mean like just like having a. College is so community based where it's like, you know, everyone you need and everything you need is within like, you know, a football field size. Yeah. So it's like everything is accessible. I have all my friends here. Like what's my biggest stress? I have to study for a test. Like, the stress bar is so low. Like mm-hmm. everything is just so manageable. And I miss
it's
like
easy to make friends. Easy. Whereas an adult, it's so hard to make friends, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most like making a genuine friend is so difficult. Like when you're in your 30s. I feel
yeah.
Like.
I've struggled a bit with that.
Yeah. Damn, I ain't even talking nothing about Love is Blind. My ADHD went on a whole tangent for 40 minutes.
Well, let's do it because, again, we're talking before this comes out. I don't know anybody. I don't know the situation.
Yeah.
Predictions. Let's just rapid fire. How many people do you think are going to leave engaged?
It'd probably be 6 people on each side to be engaged, but the Netflix will probably take 5. From each side, so it'll be 5 men, 5 women. I'm sure they'll do like a nice romantic getaway. But yeah, man, Minnesota. I'm interested to see how these people in Minnesota spit any game. You know, I was looking at a little bit of a spoiler video, so I saw who the 5 that are going to get engaged. So I'll be making sure that I pay attention to those.
Oh man, you've spoiled it for me.
Yeah, yeah, shit. I ain't gonna spoil it.
You just did. He's had 5 couples, man. I don't need to know who.
Whoa. Well, that's always the case.
Okay.
It's always 5.
Wasn't there
couples.
One season where it was like 2 or 3?
Sometimes it's like that.
The UK one might have been that. I watched that one.
With Sam and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. I watched that. It was crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. You know, and, you know, Ali, one of the guys is messing with my ex-fiance, actually.
I mean, I have to ask. What's up with you and AD? Have you seen her?
I've seen AD, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I've seen her recently. Like, I want to say, like...
First time since the show?
First time since the show.
Was this...
First time since the reunion.
Was this planned, or did you run into her?
No, it was not planned. So it was, like, one of them influencer events. Charlotte Hornets invited us out to a basketball game. They invited us to the New Orleans Pelicans. So the Hornets and the Pelicans. I don't even know why I went to that game.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I went there.
The Knicks are in town or something. Yeah. Like, what?
I did get to see the Nuggets play the Hornets, which is fun. But it was a complete waste of time. But anyway, all the Love is Blind people there. Jimmy's there. Johnny, Amy, Brittany, you know, all the. So I'm coming late, you know. I see, you know, I'm dapping everybody up. AD kind of pulls up super late. She gave everyone hugs and she's just kind of like, I'm like the last one because like I'm in a corner and like there's a bunch of people from Love is Blind that's in the middle. So she's giving everyone hugs. I'm getting ready to go get my drink.
So you were there before her.
I was there before her. Okay. So she walked in and she's giving everyone hugs. And it's like kind of awkward because like I'm like the last one to receive a hug. So, you know, I don't know what to do right there. I kind of panicked. So I was just like, hey, AD, tapped her on the shoulder. Hey, AD, and went to go get my drink.
You did?
Like, hey.
You give her a love tap? You like, yeah, what's up?
Well, it's like, it's so awkward, man. I don't know, man.
There's
like,
no cameras there, right?
There's no cameras. Like, okay. But people are watching, though. People.
Of course they are.
And I'm like, is this a setup? Like, I'm like.
Did anyone, at that point, I'd imagine, because you'd been in the room, where people like, yo, AD's coming?
Or
like,
no one said anything.
Someone in the room knew she was coming.
Like, yeah, exactly.
There's no way that they didn't know that she would be there.
And Johnny's my man. I feel like it should have been my boy Johnny. Johnny should have been like, yo, bro, you know, AD's going to come. But I don't know if he knew, though, you know?
Okay.
I don't know if he knew. Because Johnny was talking to Johnny. Jimmy's the one that told me to come over. Johnny, then I was talking to Johnny the most. But yeah, I had no idea, man, and kind of threw me off. So then I didn't really say much to her.
What'd you say?
I didn't say much. I just said, I tapped her and said, hey. And
after then, that interaction, I went to go
get some beer. I went to go get some of my beers. I stayed in a certain section. I was having conversations with the people who invited us out. Okay. So I'm out. I go back. I watch a little bit of the game. AD's sitting there. She's taking pictures. I'm like, all right. I'm just feeling. I'm like, this is super awkward.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
that's very awkward.
Let me get the hell out of here. You know, it's time for me to go.
Fucking Pelicans.
Yeah, Pelicans. It's a horrible game. The Hornets are winning. It's like, let me get out of here. So I start walking out. And to AD's credit, she says, Clay. She calls me out while I'm out. I'm already out of the area. I dap all the people from Love is Blind. I dap all the other influencers up.
This is January 17th.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Damn. I didn't know the Pelicans won. I didn't even watch the
Pelicans
game.
Pelicans won by 20. Okay.
They were. Wasn't the Hornets up at one point in the first half?
They were.
Wow.
They were up at half.
I did not watch the second half.
Yeah. You guys they lost it. LaMelo had 29. Okay, whatever. Game doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway,
she comes up to you.
She says, Clay. So I'm getting ready to walk out because it's awkward. She says, Clay. And I'm like, I know her voice. So I'm like, okay, what's this about? So she walks over and we have a conversation outside of the facility. So she says it loud as hell. Like, it's mad influencers in that area. But I'm outside of it, so I don't get to see like the awkwardness.
Yeah.
But anyway, she comes out and says, hey, are we good? And I want to be like, fuck no, we're not good. What the fuck? We have not talked in fucking years. In a year. But also, I understand why me and AD haven't talked. Like, I understand.
What do you think she meant by that? The are we good? Because that's like a coded, that can mean very different things. Like, are we good can be, are we good like as friends? Are we good like romantic? Like, what do you think she meant by that?
Is it beef? That's what she meant.
Yeah.
She meant, is there beef? And I'm just not a fake person, bro. Like, if you block me and when I feel like we were cool and the last conversation I had with you in person, it was all copacetic. I hung out with you and we shared different things with each other. And it's like, we watched all the episodes when all this happened. So then it airs for the whole world to see. You see the same thing that you just saw last week. Mm. And then now you switch up. I felt it some type of way, but I'm also trying to be like, hey, AD, I understand why you cut me off or why we're not having conversation, but I'm just not a fake person where I'm like, I haven't seen you in a year. Hey, AD, oh my God. Like, I love seeing you. Like, I'm just like, bro, I don't feel like we're friends. So I just didn't really know what to do. And I probably could have been like, kept it more corporate and like, yeah, I'm good and blah, blah, blah. But I just couldn't be fake, man. So
what'd you say?
I just said, I'm good. I said, I'm good. Things are well. I wanted to tell her like, yeah, I don't think we're good. You know, we haven't talked in a year. We probably need to hash things out. But I almost felt like, what's the point of that? Like, cause we haven't talked in a year, you know, I'm not, what am I about to do? Spend a block with you? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, if she says, you know, are we good? And you said, is this an opportunity? Like, do you want to, is this something you want to, now that there's at least some form of community, do you want to talk to her? Do you want to meet up again? Like, not even romantically. Do you have shit you want to say to her? Is there stuff?
Here's the thing. AD and I felt as though we're good friends. Even she was my ex-fiance, regardless. Our banter was good.
Yeah.
We looked out for each other. I feel as though. Now, I disrespected that by saying no to her at the altar and embarrassing her. And a lot of that stuff was, I didn't identify that it was wrong until it was there. But anyway, the ultimate premise of what I would like to do is for us to, we're friends, bro. Like, we could talk about things that we have issues with, but I don't feel like we're friends anymore though.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like that. Like, when anybody that's my friend, if we have a problem, I'm gonna wanna like understand what the issue is.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel like we're friends anymore. Like, we haven't talked in a year. There's been no checking on each other. Like, it's been nothing, you know? And anybody who doesn't check on me for a year, like, you're my acquaintance, or like, we're, like.
So you sound like you've like you're good. You moved on.
I don't see, because at that time period, I'm like, if I tell AD that no, we're not good, what am I gonna do? Like, it's just gonna be a conversation, and what am I trying to make her feel sorry for me? Like, no, like you guys, I'm happy. I'm actually happy for her. Like, I'm not a hater. I want the best for her. But I don't feel like we're friends. So it's like when she came at me and we had that conversation, I was a little shocked. I was just like, I don't even know what to do in this moment, because here's someone who I actually care for in the past, but we're not like, I don't have that same love for her like I did. It just wasn't there, you know, because I don't feel like it was genuine, you know? So I don't know. I don't really know how to navigate that when you love someone before, but you don't feel like the love is there, and then you're in their space. I kind of was fake because I just didn't know what to do.
That was a new experience for you. Yeah, so like it sounds like you moved on, but there's no beef. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, you know, say there's another event, another Hornets Pelicans game or whatever, like, and you guys end up in the same room again, like shit is cool, but it's not, you know, hey, let's, you know, come get a drink with me. Let's hang. It's like we can exist in the same space, but let's leave it at that. We don't need to pretend like, you know, there's more to this than there is.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know. And if we are going to ever be cool again, I will want it to be genuine. Like, don't come in like, hey, are we good? Crack a joke. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know me.
Like, girl. Oh, what's up?
Yeah. Like, hit me like, nigga, you know you should never. Like, it should have been like more of a genuine thing. Like, hey, we good? It's like, girl, you know we not good. So, but because you're not going to be real, yeah, we good.
Mm.
You know?
Damn.
Yeah.
I was hoping there'd be like a redemption arc or like a... You know, is she dating? Do you know anything?
I don't know. No idea. I only seen what I see on TikTok. But, you know, what I'm saying? Regardless, man, I do, like, want AD to win. Like, you know, I've shared moments with her and understand where she came from, where, you know, I can only do anything but root for her.
Yeah.
I guess I just get hurt with the fact that we were super cool, but I also have to understand that, like, I look like an asshole saying no to her at the altar. And I understand that magnitude of that moment and like how that could affect her, you know?
Is this like a year now removed? Would you ever go back and watch it? Or are you like, you're never gonna?
When people tell me they're watching Love is Blonde, I'm like sick. I'm like sick to my stomach. Like, please don't watch that. Like, and Julian, bro, like I'll talk to a new girl. The first thing they do is try to watch Love is Blonde. I talked to a girl in Christmas. That shit lasted for like 3 weeks. She had her whole family watch Love is Blonde for Christmas. I said, why are you making your mom and your dad watch Love is Blonde?
I was going to ask you, how much is that? Because again, we're further removed than the last week's time we spoke. How much has that killed your dating life? Or I would imagine it's probably hurt more than help in terms of like trying to take someone seriously.
Yeah, it's definitely hurt. I mean, I still get women that want to talk to me, but I wouldn't say like they're the women that I was attracting before the show. Yeah. Like, I'm not getting like the tech babe baddies like I was in 2023. You know, I'm not getting the finance guru women and shit like that. Like, I'm getting like OF girls and like people in the industry. Like, I'm actually kind of finding a little more comfortable talking to people who have a little bit of a social media following.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like all of us kind of have social anxiety at a certain extent because like we're so public facing. It's like, we're kind of like always aware of like other people and stuff like that. So I'm kind of like leaning towards people who like have certain vices as me, but it's definitely affecting my dating life for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never want to talk to a girl and she says, oh yeah, my father watched your scene. And you're like, oh.
It's always tough too when like, especially being in like the content game where, well, on that level, that extreme of a personal level, but this stuff is like frozen in time. And it's like, this stuff happened, what, when it was shot? Probably 3 years ago this time now. Yeah. It's like, yo, like, yeah, it's on TV. Yes, that happened. But it was also, this is 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, people reference things I've said on the podcast and the old episodes. Like, you said this about that one thing that one time. You don't feel that way anymore? No, man, no. My opinion changed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm human. I thought this was good. Sat with it. Not a big fan of it anymore. I thought highly of this person. After a while, my opinion, like, just because it's on camera and just because I said it in a microphone doesn't mean it's like a law. Like, I'm still, stuff changes. And like, you've changed, like, you're not, it's not like every girl you've met after AD you've done the same thing with, like, you've left on an altar. It's like, yo, like, this fucked up and it sucks that there's a Netflix fucking camera in my face during this, but I'm not, like, that's not, you don't just make me that. I know that's your barrier of entry for who I am is this show, but like, that's not, come on. It's real life, but it's not real life. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah.
That's always my thing with like the pod stuff. People are like, you said this. I'm like, dude, I've said so much stuff.
I say so much
stuff. Microphone in my face for 3 years, dude. Yeah. I don't know what the hell.
Yep.
Shit. So I don't know, man.
No, that's facts, bro. It's like, bro, I evolved. I'm not married to my opinions. My opinions change all the time. Honestly, bro, I could say some wild shit and you could literally check me in the same conversation. I'm like, damn. I don't even know why I thought that.
Yeah.
And it don't make no sense, bro.
Yeah, man. I don't know what I have for lunch today. Yeah. Like, what the hell
but, you know, people
about?
Don't understand TV or understand social media or understand content. So, like, it's very, like, they're very curious about it. And they kind of keep your opinion. Like, when you say anything online, they act like you had that conversation with them. And it's like,
yeah,
bro, sometimes I say stuff just because, you know, the mic was in my face. I was drinking a little bit and I spiced it up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
like the first episode when I went and I met you, bro, I was lit.
We got drunk.
I was lit. I like
we got really drunk.
Yeah. You saw something a little something. Like I said everything in truth, but you know how liquor, you know, add an extra attribute to what you're saying?
Definitely. Nah, that was a fun
episode. Yeah. I missed my whole flight, everything.
Yeah. Crazy. Damn, I'm trying to think of what else we're
talking
about.
I had so much anxiety that day too, lit with y'all, because of all the whole like Selena Powell thing. Like that was that
the timing actually, of that was crazy.
That 2024, bro. Like just the anxieties of like, man, I'm doing a podcast and it feels like I'm about to do a presentation to my executive. You know, just like because the whole world's watching. I feel so good that pressure is not on me anymore. Like it's like, all right, cool. Like now I can come on this podcast and talk about, you know, escorting. Like I wouldn't dare do that. You know, when I first met you.
Yeah, we're having such like healthy conversations talking about like content creation and starting businesses and like I'm showing you my whole setup and all the tech. We're like, it's like very like informative. We're like, yeah, this is, you know, I'll help you out with that. As soon as they record. Yeah, so $2,000 for some pussy. Now I'm fucking away. I'm like, what the hell? We were just talking about the board, man.
I got a complex mind, bro. Yeah. Should be jumping, bro. It'd be like, damn, bro. I need to get money. I need to be rich. I need to read this book. Vagina. So much other stuff, bro.
But all right, let's get into some voicemails. That's a cool little song. Guys from Denmark made this
for me. Oh, nice. Yeah. He just made it?
Yeah, that's all producers. Yeah, it's pretty nice of them. All right, here we go.
Hi, I was just calling because I feel like we're in the midst of a ghosting epidemic. Like every relationship that situation that I've been in since I was 22 and I'm 25, turning 26. Later this year. So I was just calling to see if you had any advice for a 20-something-year-old that is feeling a bit discouraged about dating and not even necessarily dating, but approaching having a relationship in the future because I'm just afraid that it's not going to happen because every situation has been the same since I've been basically in college. So if you have any advice, I'd love to hear it. And I can leave another voicemail telling my actual stories of what's happened. But first, I guess, like, I want to get past this shame, I guess, for feeling this way.
Jesus. Well, I was gonna say I feel like she's referring to one very specific incident that we're not aware of.
Yeah.
Damn, I feel bad for but like I mean that's this is this not kind of I mean I don't know what to say. Yeah, she sounds awfully jaded and I feel bad for her. In terms of like advice, I mean everyone's been ghosted. I've been ghosted. I've done the ghosting. Mm-hmm. I think that's a young man's game. I think when you get older, you realize how shitty that can make someone feel about themselves, in particular you calling here. Like it has ramifications that make people feel less about themselves. And I think people need to take account for some people being intimate is not as important or not as meaningful as it is for other people. And some people are better at having, not better, better makes it sound like you're worse at it, but like some people are more accustomed and are more okay with having casual sex or hookups, whereas it doesn't sound like they, you know, they'll string you along and then pull the rug out from under you once they have sex. And it's like, well, now I feel shitty about myself, not just this relationship. I feel bad about myself. So I don't know. I can ramble about this, but go do your thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think she needs to get a better relationship with herself. And in a sense of, you know, I understand she's 25, 26, and that's probably at the age right there where women are looking for their life partner. So I can understand feeling disappointed with getting ghosted, especially it kind of sounds like it's happened frequently. I would tell her to fall in love with herself. You know, maybe there's a situation where the men that you're attracting is based off the energy that you're perceiving, and who you want to attract, you should probably try to become that. Frank Ocean had this line on Channel Orange, or maybe it was the album after Channel Orange, where he said, "I never fucked nobody that I wouldn't want to be, though." And I'm like, man, that was such a powerful.
Man, that's a bar.
That's a bar. I'm like, man, like that was such a crazy line. So wow. It's like, you know, like everybody who I try to sleep with, like maybe I should look up to them, or maybe I should, there should be some aspect of them that I actually like would love to learn about or want to gain. And that way, if you get ghosted, well, did you get a conversation? You probably gained something from it. So it's now the way the people who I'm dating is dating up. So even if I don't get the full, you know, exposure of them, I'm getting something out of it, which is evolving me.
Yeah. And like, and to the guys, it's mostly men that ghost. I've been ghosted. Honestly, in the past when I've been ghosted, I was like cool with it. But there were like a couple times where it hurt. Cause you never want, you know, sometimes you want closure. But like if you're a guy and you're doing that, and to the guys that probably more like did this to you as well, like it's a coward's way out. Like you shouldn't want to be with someone that does that to you or someone that treats you like that. It's the non-confrontational way to have them wipe their hands clean of a situation, but then leave you like this. And it's not fair that you feel this way. And they're probably doing this to like, you know, 10 other women since then. So I do want to say, if you do have any hold on or any reservations, like, oh man, this one guy I still think about, or I still think it could work with this one guy. Don't move past these gentlemen. And also, I'm sure that there were patterns and things that they did that overlapped. This kid from college, this kid's in your young adult life. There's tactics that people do to get what they want. And I'm sure that there's repeated behavior that at this point, hopefully you can pick up when someone's doing that to you, just be wary of it. I don't think dating should be a cautionary tale for you. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with you. I just think you need to, to your initial point, just, you know, pick yourself up. And then I think go from there and just, prioritize your well-being over these others. Don't like love bomb or fall for somebody before you
and date older too, because you're in that age range. If you're dating 25, 26 year olds, I'll tell you, if you ran into me too,
from someone that was a clinical ghoster, like I was never even at the phase of my life.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think I was ghosting. It's just like I had so much that I was dealing with, and like yeah, like a roster. So it's just like, it wasn't like I was even ghosting. It was just like, honestly, like it just wasn't on my radar.
Yeah. Every time. Yeah. Like to your point, like when I was, it wasn't like in the spirit, I wasn't like getting off on being like a bad guy. Like, ooh, I'd be next. Like I wasn't like, there wasn't joy in like the ghosting part of it. It was just like, okay, like we had fun. We did the thing. Like, okay, I'll just go, you know, go on the next weekend or whatever. Like that was kind of my thing with it. I don't think these guys are like getting off on leaving you ghosted either. But like that's just to our conversation earlier about like dating now. It's like the culture is just built up on numbers and volume versus like substantial relationships.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's casualties along the way. But don't beat yourself up over this stuff. Like I guarantee a lot of your friends have been ghosted. A lot of your male friends too have probably been. Men don't like to talk about it. I've been ghosted.
Yeah, I've been ghosted.
Sucks. It sucked a few times when it's happened to me. Other times I've been like, eh, okay. But like, that's a chin check every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Last time I got picked up in public, this is over the summer. This is a while ago, a long time. Actually, was it last two summers ago? This girl, we were making eyes across the bar it was a day drink situation, like a Saturday. And I'm with like, I'm late to a group of friends that are playing cards. And so I'm like late to the thing. So they've been there. And I'm like, this girl keeps looking over. And I was like, yo, has she been looking over here? Like, is she looking at one of you? I'm like, no, she just started. I was like, oh, so maybe it's me. And I'm like, still not convinced that it's me. So they all go out to smoke and we're leaving, packing our stuff up. And I run back in to go to the bathroom. And as I'm coming out, I'm the last one in the group to come out. She grabs my arm and like number, napkin, whatever. And I was like, oh shit, I guess it was me. Go home with my friends. Like we're drinking, hanging one of our apartments. I text her. She texts me back. We meet later that night and we hook up. And I was like, damn, that was awesome. And then we hook up again, like another night or whatever, in the middle of the week. And then I just never heard from her. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
She was pretty. She was cool. Like, I was like, that was nice. I was like, why did that have to, in my mind, I was like, you know, why did that have to end? Like, that was shitty. And she lived near me. So I see her in the street. Yeah. And then I think she has a boyfriend. I think she was on a little hall pass situation cheating. Yeah. but like, in my mind, I was like, damn, why did that have to end? And it sucks. But like, you know, people do things for different reasons. But like, you're not the bad person for getting ghosted. It's usually the person that's doing that act that's the person in the wrong. So I don't know, man. Any last words? Don't go on Love is Blind.
Yeah, don't do that.
don't think a dating show is your way to success.
It's going to ruin it even worse.
Yeah. Let's do another
one. Yo, Julian, what's good? Hope you're doing well. My intrusive thoughts currently is the fact that, you know, recently in the last year or so, I've glowed up, you know, lost hella weight, got a degree. I'm out here popping in these, you know, industry streets, big time gigs, all of that. And I was supposed to be working an international job. And while on the international job, I was ready to be, you know, like, I was ready to be fucking. I ain't gonna hold you. I was ready to be, you know, experiencing this glow up. But I literally picked recently, you know, the time to fall in love with a shorty.
Mm.
And I feel like a dun-dun. Like, I had to pick right now to fall in love. What do you think about that? Am I pussy for that? Let me know. Appreciate you, bro.
Look at him. He's trying to.
Damn.
He's trying to actively avoid what happened to our last call. Like, he's trying to be a good guy.
Yeah, he's trying to be a good guy, man. Damn.
I like this for him. Yeah, man, you can't. There's no, to the conversation we had earlier, like, there's no timeline on love. Something just happens. And, I mean, if this is the person you love, this is who you want to be with, then you got to honor that. Be a man about it and be faithful to your chick. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, good for you. You got a degree. You're good. Did a great job. You lost weight. Like, shit is going well in your life, and it sounds like you did all that, a lot of that stuff on your own. But in doing so, it got you to the point to get the girl that you currently are with and love. So, like, you know, girls will always be there.
Yeah.
So, like, if it doesn't work out with this one, guess what? There's another international trip or flight you can take to, you know, make up for lost time if you feel like you need to.
Yeah.
I'm taking the good guy angle on this. Do you want to take the heel and be like, you know?
I don't, because I like what he's saying. Like, first of all, congratulations on you getting an international job. Congratulations on you getting your degree. Those are amazing things. And like Julian said, that if, you know, you and the girl doesn't work out, you got the job, you got the degree. It sounds like you are on your way to, you know, being successful and being able to generate income in society. And if you're doing well money-wise, bro, you're always going to have a girl. You know what I'm saying? So, and it seems like you got a good personality. I heard your voice and stuff like that. You're cracking jokes. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I think you're on your right path. I would say, bro, you know, leave it to, like, a guy like me. Like, I spent most of my 20s fornicating and messing around with women. And I was talking to Julian before this where it's like I felt as though that guys, it's really celebrated for us to, you know, be with so many different women, fornicate with different women, but we're mixing up our energies with people. So I would tell you, I struggle with sometimes comparing too many women because I had sex with so many women before in my past. I compare them, you know, I remember I did Love is Blind and I'm like, damn, I'm about to marry AD, but like, how this gonna work? Cause I was just talking to a girl for 6 months. She was pretty solid. And what's she gonna think when I'm about to marry AD and I only know AD for 10 days? You know, so it's like you always have these comparisons. So I think relationships, and I think that your life, especially if you're trying to be successful, would probably be better with just one woman instead of just managing multiple people, you know, cause that's time and time is money. And if you could just deal with one person who understands what you got going on, your life to me would be a lot more simpler.
Yeah, and the whole like the grass is greener idiom, it's that I think that's natural. I think as humans, you're always like, how can I make my situation better? How can I evolve? And like, look at, I'm sure you 2-3 years ago would have loved to have, you know, looked like you do now with your, you know, weight glow up, your get the degree that you have. Like, at this point, where you currently are was the greener grass. You've hit it. You've accomplished it. And look what's come of it. You have a great job. You're in a healthy, beautiful relationship. Like, this is it. You did the very things that were at one point the goal, one point the dream. Don't foil them because you want to have, like, a rendezvous. There's nothing pussy about being faithful. Most men, like, it's lame to show faithful and pretend to be faithful and be a dog on the back. Like, that's corny. That's not a good person. You don't want to look up to those kind of people. We all know so many of those guys. The world is filled with plenty of guys like that, and they all have internal battles. I mean, do you want to spend half your time, like, do you want to come home from a long international trip, tell your girl about what happened, then have, like, this weight or guilt while you, like, knowing that you're obviously leaving out the nefarious part of the trip? Like, wouldn't you rather just, like, share what actually happened and the fun times you had and the international food you had and the drinks or whatever you did? Like, you don't want to have to sleep at night with her after being gone for, like, a month or however many weeks, come home, get in bed with her, and then just, like, feel like, damn, it's going to hit you. Like, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. That shit will hit you in the chest. I've been in a past relationship, I've fucked up, and I thought it was, like, you know, similar situation. I was out of the country, whatever, and I was like, I got back, and I was like, man, I'm not, you know, I'm not thinking about that. I was fucking, you know, wherever. And I got, as soon as I got home and I got back with my girl, I was like, oh, this doesn't, like, go away. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel it. Yeah. And she'll pick up on that energy. Like, she'll detect something's off. And you can't vilify her if she does. You can't be like, you're crazy. She's right. So, like, just play smart. Don't be the bad guy. Don't aspire to be the bad guy. It's not a good place to be, man.
Yeah.
So
you're not pussy, bro. You're definitely a stand-up guy. Good luck to you and your relationship.
Let's do one more.
All right.
Hey, Julian. So I was in the hospital for the past couple of weeks. I had some seizures that's never happened before.
Oh, shit.
And come out of the hospital and realize you're not on the pod no more. So it seems like your year has started pretty rough, just like...
Oh, shit.
Imagine coming home and being like, that's your woe. That's the news in your life that matters. It's like, where the fuck's Julian?
Where the fuck is Julian, bro? How long have I been in his coma?
All these bad takes gave me seizures, and now I'm back, and now I'm stuck. That's hilarious.
Mine has. And I'm, like, relearning how to walk and all this shit. God. I can finally speak normally. I was wondering, you know, any advice you had on starting a new year in a rough place like this, you know? It's been not fun, and I just want to hear your thoughts. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I mean, rough places are relative, man. Like, I got fired. I didn't fucking seize up, and I'm not learning how to walk. I mean, there's always, you know, knock on wood. I mean, you sound amazing. Kudos to you for literally and figuratively getting back on your feet. I'm sorry that the breakup happened. You know, that's really, if that could have saved you a seize or two, I don't know. Like, that's insane that you, like, this is on your mind when you're going through, like, a medical emergency. It's like, where the fuck is Julian?
Hey, man, like, you matter, bro.
The thought of that to me is, I'm honored, but, like, what an awful thing to go through to then care what the fuck I'm up to. It's insane. Like, I'm picturing him, like, in a hospital bed, learning how to speak and eat again, and potentially being told he might not be able to walk again, and finding my new phone number and calling it and be like, hold on, hold on a sec. I need to, hey, Julian, man. Hey, you know, you heard you had a rough year too, buddy. My shit was peanuts compared to what the fuck you're going through, man. So, but thank you. Let's give him some actual tangible advice. I was wondering if you have any advice to someone that's starting in a rough year in a rough place. I think anytime you're in a rough place, not even if it's like a New Year's thing in Clay, I mean, I feel like we've been in some rough places.
Yeah, definitely.
I think running from self-evaluation is something that a lot of men do in particular. It's the avoidant energy. I think it's important to look inward and give yourself time to think and reflect internally, which means, like, you know, turning off the music, turning off YouTube, watching shows, listening to podcasts, and sitting with your thoughts, whether that be journaling or just thinking out loud or just thinking in general. Give yourself the attention that you need for yourself. And with that, also use people that you love. I think a lot of, again, men, mostly when we're in a rut, we don't like to communicate. We want to hold it all in. Talk to you, if your parents, siblings, relationships, friends, use them, talk to them. I'm not saying trauma dump, but just say, hey, like, you know, this happened to me today. I'm feeling sad about this, or this has been difficult. And more often than not, there's someone that you're talking to that has had a similar situation. I'm sure not to the degree of like the physical ailment that you went through, but like, you know, the self-doubt or the questions about, will I be myself again? Will I bounce back? Everyone's gone through some form of trouble or trauma that they could at least pass on some enlightenment to your situation.
Yeah. That's beautiful. As you said, I'm not going to take up too much time, but honestly, man, I feel like you're doing some of those things to redefine who you are. Like you had a crazy situation. You weren't talking, you weren't walking, and it sounds like you were able to get on your feet. So you're already doing some things that to me are honorable. For you, bro, I'll just say have small goals. Like one of the things I do to help my mental health out is having small goals to accomplish throughout the week. And that enhances my dopamine. And that way I felt as though that I was struggling when I would have long-term goals. Mm. So for your perspective, you might want to be fully healthy in it. And your doctor says, hey, it's going to take 8 months. So you just having that one goal, it's going to feel like it's 8 months away.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe you have certain goals throughout the week, like, you know, I want to do this an inch better. And I'm telling you, bro, just having like those small little goals, having that small little dopamine is going to make you feel a little bit better. And, you know, I understand that you had a rough start to the year, but that's just a start. You are the captain of your life. You own your destiny. So if you don't like the way how things are going, change that shit. Change it. Try to think about what would make this year worthwhile and aim towards that. Read books. Try to put yourself in an imaginary mindset where now you're manifesting exactly who you want to be. I hate to get so full out, you know.
No, go up, dude. Save it. Fucking let it fly. I think this, the stuff like this, I mean, I feel like we don't hear a lot about this phase. We always hear so much about when the job finished, like goals accomplished. I did it. I climbed the mountain. We always hear about the success, but this guy calling in is called in shortly, like literally, I can finally speak normally is a thing he said in this voicemail.
Yeah.
Like that in itself, like that's huge, but you're also calling us at a very vulnerable time.
Yeah.
And if I'm someone that you want to talk to during this journey, like keep calling in, whatever, like, but point is, your point, which I think is very important. Everyone is asked, what's your 3 to 5 year plan? What's your like long-term goals? There's so many things that need to happen in those moments to make those things even possible. And for you, whatever those goals may be, to your point of like the weekly goals, even if it's like a daily thing, challenge yourself. Hey, I never read books. I want to read. Don't just grab a 300-page book and be like, I got to do like, okay, I'm going to read like 5 pages a day. Mm-hmm. Start off like small, just make small goals or just do little things that make you the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
But dude, I'm still not over this. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Thank you for checking in on me. And I hope you call back and give us updates because you will, you know, you will build back better. You will be a better version of yourself.
Shout out to you, man. You sound awesome as well. I couldn't even tell that you suffer from a stroke.
Yeah, seizures here. Had some seizures that never happened before.
Oh, seizures.
Came out of the hospital and never really. Yeah, I mean, the fact that this is just all said in one breath to me is insane. I had some seizures that's never happened before, and I come out of the hospital and realize you're not on the pod no more. Why is that even in the same, like, that shouldn't be treated in the same breath? But
he probably learned how to speak when he saw you weren't. Yeah, he's like, what? He's
motivated enough. Yeah. Like, I gotta call Julie.
Yeah.
Like, that woke him up. Like,
you motivate him to say a complete paragraph.
He stood up. He's like, wait a minute. Like,
I can't take this.
Dude, that's insane. Appreciate you, man. Well, I think that's good. I don't know where we're at time-wise, but I feel like we put in some work, bro.
Yeah,
what's your plan? We got one night in New York. By the time this comes out, this night will be long and gone. What do you want to do tonight? You got any plans?
Man, I got my suitcase. So I'm going to the Philadelphia Eagles parade. And the thing is, I got to be up at like 7 in the morning. So I feel like I got to get back to Jersey. But I'm down to get a beer if you want to get a beer or something.
We could pop downstairs. Yeah. That's why where I live, there's plenty of options. Let me get out of some sweats. I'll throw on some real clothes. Let's get a drink, man.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Right,
well, always love, fun. Man.
Yeah.
Always a good time. Oh, thank you for being with us. Obviously, if you want to call in, it's 877-557-SWWP. Your intrusive thought therapist is here, as is Clay. Clay, my first on-camera guest. Thank you so much, man. I threw this together. I don't know. Yeah. We got two lights going up. We got the single cam. Hopefully, we can get two cams at some point. But I'm honestly, when I started this podcast, you were the first person I had in mind when it comes to having a guest on. So to like, to our point of making goals, to see it and to execute it, to me, this is a big deal. I'm not going to get emotional about it, but this is awesome that like this moment's happening. And for us to connect with the old show and to keep a real relationship, an authentic relationship, and for you to be here literally in my apartment, this means a lot to me. So thank you, man.
And I got a shout out to you, man. You were super authentic, bro. Like from the moment that we had our first conversation, you've been a legit friend. And we were just talking about how it's tough to have like a dope friend. So appreciate you, bro, for just following up and just being a legit guy, man. Bro.
Let's get a beer.
Yeah, let's get a beer, man. Let's go.
Thanks, guys. Peace.